Good evening. My name is Neil Stone. I'm a member of NISPOP, and it's a privilege for me to actually be able to be here this evening, and especially to speak after Jessica and just sort of share some of my insights from the International Solidarity Mission, which ran in August of this year, 1 month ago. As Amanda said, I originally come from north of the border, and since I've lived here in New York, I try to make it back to the Philippines once every couple of years to participate in these types of fact-finding missions. When I lived there in 1997 in the Philippines, 97-98, I was working with the national human rights organization Karapatan, and the work that I did, a lot of the work that I did, was documentation of the plight of the Moro people, who are the residents of the southern Philippines on the island of Mindanao, which right down over here, that whole area. And as most of you that follow the media know, this whole area around Zamboanga and following all the way down here is an area of great mineral wealth and an area of unrest. Primarily Islamic and Muslim, or Islamic Muslim. The people in this area have had sort of an age-old struggle with let's call it imperialistic forces, dating clear back to when the Spanish arrived on the scene in the 1600s. The actual the meld of the Lumad people, the indigenous people of southern Philippines, of Mindanao, was a rather peaceful evolution, because it was by trade that the merchants from the Middle East arrived on the scene in the 12th century, and just through marriages and through interaction with these merchants, more of the Lumads embraced Islam. And so the whole notion of Islam in southern Mindanao and the interface with the existing indigenous people is a peaceful coexistence, and it's a peaceful evolution that came into being. It was really only when Christianity appeared on the scene in the 1600s that the real tensions took place, and there was a sort of immediate fight against the sultanates versus the Spaniards to reclaim what they felt has always been theirs. And so the reason why I give you this little backgrounder is to set the stage for a film which was produced in May of this year. It speaks of the current unrest in the southern Philippines in Mindanao, particularly in the autonomous region, the Islamic region, which is in that region that I pointed out right here. The historic perspective that I just gave you is what is considered and now taught within the Moro communities as being sort of the first wave of defense that the Moro people put up against the invasive forces of the Spaniards. They also teach now of sort of the second defense of the Moro people, which began when President Marcos was trying to reclaim Sabah, the island right over here, from Indonesia. And that still is an ongoing sort of debate in the region as to who should actually have the island of Sabah. And what Marcos did is he tried to send 20 Moros into Sabah to create unrest and to really rile things up in that island in order to move in and claim the island. And this was an actual They called it Operation Merdeka, and from 1968 onwards, there was a second wave of defense, an organized second wave of defense that came into being through an organization founded, the MNLF, the Moro National Liberation Front. And with the birth of that organization in 1972, formally with martial law, this organization formed for the purpose of defending the Moro people and their rights and their land. I'm going to try not to bore you, but I'm just going to hit a couple of key points from my notes here, just in terms of setting the stage for the video. The tensions between the MNLF and the Philippine government, there were many events, banters back and forth with many, many lives lost in the process, right up until, most significantly, 1996, the year before I went to that region and sort of did my learnings, when the MNLF accepted a final peace agreement, which was a very formidable achievement for both sides in that region. And the MNLF peace accord held for a number of years, basically until 2001, when the war on terror that was declared by the United States gave license and free rein to the Philippine government to round up all the terrorists. The terrorists being a group that splintered off from the MNLF in 1996, because they were not content with the peace agreement and felt that the only way that they could advocate for the true independence of southern Mindanao was through an armed warfare means, and they would do whatever it would take at all costs to achieve their goals. And this group became known as the Abu Sayyaf. The Abu Sayyaf was a loose unity geared towards, with a mandate of going against the Philippine government. Some were jihad radicals, some were discontented youth that had military connections, that were former Republic of the Philippines soldiers, and some of them were from the peasant communities. Small handful of them can do a lot of damage to the PR for everybody involved in fighting for moral rights and independence and freedom. And it was this group that was the catalyst for the Philippine government to go in and really seize the day for going after the terrorists of southern Mindanao. And so in December of 2001, the Philippine government went in and heavy-handedly incarcerated over 400 Moro, and the initial onslaught in doing so consisted of 73 individuals from the island of Basilan in southern Mindanao, right down here. And those initial 73 were carted off to Manila, where most of them did not have indictments or charges laid against them to this day. And this film takes off on the recent happenings in southern Mindanao and the reason why the ceasefire that was put into place right up until March of this year is broken, and the situation is going into a tailspin in terms of keeping the peace, achieving any peace. Regressive is an understatement. It's taken a serious turn for the worse. And following the presentation of the film, what I'm going to do is we're going to have just a really short little story time before we go into Q&A. And I'm just going to read you verbatim the statement, the political statement that was made by our fact-finding group that dealt with southern Mindanao 2.5 weeks ago. This is what went before the press, okay? And then we'll just have a basic Q&A. All right? So as you can all see, militarization of public schools, destruction of potable water sources, including water supply systems, and incarceration of innocent, or at least not charged, civilians that have been lumped in as with terrorists. It's happening now. It's real. It's that was made just at the start of June of this year, and that's current, very current. Besides visiting Camp Bagong Diwa in Taguig and actually interviewing people like Isnera, whose husband was executed, we interviewed evacuees that have left Mindanao as a result of what you've seen in this video and who have been displaced and now are living in and around Manila. After I was at Baseco Tondo, which is on the shore of Manila Bay, I found out afterwards that not only are these people, 88,000 of them, displaced Moro from southern Mindanao that have been fighting against the goons that keep coming in to bulldoze their homes that are built on stilts. But there's also a human organ trade that has sprung up over the last 3 to 4 years where they are supplying human organs to the Chinese, the Japanese, Taiwanese, and Koreans that have money to actually pay for human organs for transplant. I have a friend in Japan right now who's doing a documentary, and hopefully it'll be done in the next 3 to 4 months. And when it is, perhaps we can get that subtitled and have that delivered over here. As I said before, I just wanted to just share this before we open this up to Q&A. This was presented to the national press 2.5 weeks ago on the heels of the fact-finding mission that looked into the events that were documented in this film. It says, "We, the 11 foreign and Filipino migrant participants of the Moro team, condemn the Philippine government's total disregard for the rights of the Moro people. At present, war rages on in Sulu, and although we are miles away from our target community in Manila, this did not deter us from realizing and comprehending the vulgarity of the state's bloodhound policy against the Bangsamoro people. On our visits to Moro settlements in the national capital region such as Baseco, Taguig, and Montalban and Rizal, we heard detailed testimony that highlight the plight of the internally displaced. The Bangsamoro people are escaping a situation where aerial bombings, massacres, and summary executions, terrorist tagging, and massive evacuations are daily occurrences, which have forced them to leave their sacred connection to their land, culture, and livelihood. Anywhere seemed better than staying in their war-torn homeland, in spite of their present living conditions. A highlighted case would be a community of 88,000, among them Moros from Cotabato and Basilan, living on top of a garbage dump in the Manila Bay area of Baseco. It's a reclamation area where health conditions and social services are deplorable. The water is contaminated, causing severe intestinal problems and skin disorders. Prenatal care is non-existent, and residents die from preventable illnesses. They're also denied their basic right to education, and those who went to school before the demolition are currently not enrolled and have remained insecure of their living conditions. The average family living in Baseco scavenges through trash in order to survive, earning less than the minimum wage. However, the most pressing issue in Baseco is the imminent threat of demolition. Their homes were demolished after a 30-minute warning 2 weeks ago to salvage their homes, their livelihood, and their life. This happens regularly. In Culiat, we heard the testimony of a woman migrant worker who on her return to the Philippines was subjected to humiliation, more than the humiliation that she suffered abroad, after bombing incidents around the country in 2003. military men in black masks stormed her house, allegedly looking for Abu Sayyaf men. Another woman's story in Montalban recounts how her husband, suffering of meningitis, was kicked out of the hospital and died at home because they could no longer afford to pay. Similarly, one other woman was also widowed when her husband's appendix ruptured because of the high cost of healthcare, and her two children are now working abroad because of the discriminatory hiring practices in the Philippines against Muslims. The Bangsamoro, again and again, are running away from terror at the risk of their safety to sustain themselves. Now, another war broke out in Sulu in February 2005, as was shown here. The testimony of Madzurana Padiwan, 10 years old, and Amuja Jael Padiwan, who is 7 years old, were the survivors of a massacre in Sitio Buno Ais in Maybong, Sulu, on February 1st of 2005. They were both on the video. They told of their actual experiences in witnessing the killing of their five-month pregnant mother, their father, Tal, their 14-year-old brother, and their uncle. On February the 1st, 2005, at 6 in the morning, the mother was in the kitchen preparing the children to go to school. Both parents were in the kitchen cooking rice cakes, which they sell for a living, and all of a sudden an armed man was inside their house and firing at her sleeping family and all the other members in the house. The armed man then proceeded to the kitchen and fired at her mother and father. She then saw her parents bleeding on the floor. Madzurana said that the soldier, speaking in the local dialect, asked her to go down from the house with her younger brother. Outside, they saw more soldiers wearing camouflage who spoke in Tagalog and the local dialect. The two children then walked to a relative's house further down the road. They ran. After being given the runaround, and after two trips, and after the humiliating process of security checks, we, the fact finders, were further enraged to witness the deplorable conditions of the 127 Moro people that are detained for their alleged links to terrorism during our visit to the Metro Manila Detention Jail in Camp Bagantiwa in Taguig. We were made to remove our clothing one by one in a curtained side area for guard inspection, and one of our female delegates commented, "As I stood there with my trousers around my knees and my panties at my thighs, I was horrified to think of the visiting families enduring this when they come every day." But even more, I couldn't help but feel that it was more about humiliation and robbing the families of their dignity, since the ankle area of my pants was never even checked for a weapon. Even though we observed that the guards were especially gentle with the foreign-looking delegates, we still experienced the process and we questioned its intention. We, the delegates, learned that there were more than 400 inmates that were detained at Camp Bagantiwa. Of the 400, 129 were suspected Abu Sayyaf, 73 of which were illegally arrested following the military crackdown in Basilan last 2001. But on March 16, 2005, 27 detainees were killed after the 27-hour negotiations bogged down and the military and the police started firing indiscriminately. 11 of those killed were victims of the Basilan crackdown. Of the survivors, most have not seen a day in court or been charged with a crime, which is an outright violation of international human rights law. Furthermore, since the massacre, men are forced to live and be confined in a 10 by 12 foot cell on the bottom floor of a prison, even though the upper floors are unoccupied. The overhead lights are turned off from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. each day, after and with only a very small window at the bottom of the large window as the light source, and the detention area was dark when we were there, and we could barely see the detainees across the outer visitor's cell to the inmate's cell. And furthermore, the food is causing most of the men's sickness. These appalling situations prove the widespread state, irresponsibility, and neglect, and we denounce the systemic violence directed towards the Bangsamoro. They are the targets of blatant discrimination, national oppression, denial of land rights, and historic injustice. And for this reason, we called for, number one, the immediate release of all political prisoners, especially the minors and the seriously ill. Number two, a thorough investigation to be conducted at Camp Bagongdiwa and a fair and speedy trial to be given to those detained, that there would be an improvement in the inhumane living conditions and overall improvement in the health conditions. Number three, an end to the discrimination and demonization imposed upon the Bangsamoro people. Number four, the illegal demolitions of people's houses in places like Baseko be stopped immediately, and that people should be guaranteed their security and their safety. Number five, that the 53rd Infantry Battalion, elements of the Philippine National Police Special Action Force, and the Regional Special Action Unit be held accountable for the Patiwan Massacre, and Gloria Macapagal Arroyo, Chief of Staff and President of the Republic. Number six, the immediate pullout of military AFP and U.S. troops in Mindanao and Sulu to end the USRP Balikatan exercises and to end U.S. intervention in all aspects of the Bangsamoro state of affairs. Number seven, that the peace negotiations between the liberation groups and the government of the Republic of the Philippines be resumed and respected. And number eight, that the reparations and the right of the Bangsamoro people to return to their ancestral homelands. That was what we presented when we were in the Philippines. I think that's enough said. I'll end my presentation on that note. And there's a lot of content there. And I'm sure some of you also have some questions for Jessica. So thank you very much.